Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Friday, November 7th, and occasionally on Fridays, we like to kind of step back from just the news of the day and take kind of a 30,000-foot perspective on where we're at in our moment in time, in law, in politics, in culture, and maybe by comparison with where we were at, say, you know, 10 years ago or so when Trump came down the escalator for the first time, and we have seen the outflowing of the MAGA movement. And I think it's an apt point that we kind of look back 10 years ago, and I can't even believe that it's been 10 years, to see how, unfortunately, a lot of the commentary and the accusations that were hurled against the right by the left, like racism, anti-Semitism, you know, you don't care about coalitions, you're only, you know, for certain candidates that meet your demographic criteria. All of those things were, I think, falsely trying to smear the right 10 years ago. And today, bizarrely, somehow a segment of the right is leaning into that and is actually purposefully trying to raise up this notion of anti-Semitism and these critiques of racism that unfortunately are probably correct. And of course, I'm talking about Tucker Carlson and platforming Nick Fuentes, who is openly incredibly anti-Semitic. And then my good friend Dinesh D'Souza warned of mass desertions of minorities from the GOP following racist attacks on Vivek Ramaswamy. This was just so bizarre because Vivek, who of course is the former presidential candidate, he's running as a Republican for the governor of Ohio, posted a Halloween photo of himself and his two sons on Halloween. And the post in the comments had so many racist replies of people who, genuinely, of people who were suggesting that he go back to India, that this is a white holiday, this is American, he can't participate. I mean, things that are just utter nonsense that correctly and rightfully can be classified as racist. And so where are we at here? Because I would have thought that 10 years from the vile, hateful rhetoric that was wrongfully targeted at Trump and conservatives, 10 years later, we wouldn't be, as a segment of the party at least, leaning into this and defending this, like Heritage Foundation President Kevin Roberts, again, bizarrely defended Tucker Carlson, platforming instead of interviewing and confronting Nick Fuentes. He platformed him and didn't even ask. You know, when he said basically he's pro-Hitler, he didn't even ask or push back on this at all. So where are we at in this moment in time? Well, let's welcome in Dinesh D'Souza, who, of course, is a commentator, has been part of the conservative movement for decades and is very prolific on this issue. Dinesh, this just doesn't even make any sense to me.
No, you're quite right. The issue here is not, as some people have tried to portray it, cancel culture or free speech. Nobody's contesting the free speech of any of these people, not Tucker, not Nick Fuentes, not even of the so-called groypers who go on all our feeds and denounce us from morning to night. These guys have a lot of time on their hands. The real issue is, like, what do we stand for? What does MAGA stand for? What does the Republican Party stand for? And we're just getting a whole bunch of weirdness coming out, partly from Tucker, but partly from Candace and so many others that are not only alien to the spirit of MAGA, but they're hostile. You know, Tucker will defend the socialist regime of Maduro in Venezuela, or he will say, well, Sharia law is not so bad. And then, as you mentioned, you know, Vivek Ramaswamy, and look, going back a year or two, there were some people who wanted to fight with Vivek about the issue of H-1B visas, and that's fine. But here's Vivek, very innocuous picture for Halloween, his two sweet kids, and all this, go back to India, you're not really an American. And my point is, this is not really leaving apart the kind of moral objection to treating people this way. It's just politically stupid. I mean, does the Republican Party want to drive away socially conservative blacks and Latinos and Indian Americans and other immigrants who are assimilating to America and assimilating to American conservatism? I can't think of a kind of stupider political strategy.
Yeah, and this is what is wild to me, is that when somebody like Tucker platforms someone like Nick Fuentes, and there's a difference, and I talked about this the day after this happened, saying there's a difference between what you did with Nick Fuentes, which was confront his ideology and actually have a debate and to say, you know, here's why I think you're wrong. That's what we should do. That's what Charlie Kirk did, is to say, let's welcome more speech. And we believe that the true ideas that are grounded in the biblical worldview will ultimately prevail. There's a difference between debate versus platforming versus basically saying, you know, let me elevate this person and suggest that people follow him. And what the conservative movement overall should have done, regardless of how much we have liked Tucker in the past, or, you know, when he was on Fox, you know, all of us watched his show, all of that, it should have been this coalescing of saying, no, that's not what the conservative movement stands for. But it seems like we have totally lost our identity, Dinesh. It seems like we are so fractured. I mean, they want to say Democrats are in disarray. I think the Republican Party has no idea who is in the tent and who is outside of it.
Well, I do think that it is encouraging that over the last, I would say, 30 days, there has been a pretty unified wall of resistance against the kind of full-scale admission of these bigoted anti-Semite groypers into our movement. There's also been a pretty firm pushback against Tucker. Even his, you know, kind of one prominent defender, which is Kevin Roberts at Heritage, has now pretty much backed away from him, maybe just to save his job, but he's done it, you know, he's done it anyway. And so think about it, Jenna. I mean, leaving aside like Candace Owens and Fuentes, I mean, you couldn't name a prominent public defender of Tucker right now. And that tells you a lot. This is the difference between us and the left. They have allowed the Ilhan Omars and even the more virulent anti-Semites into the Democratic Party, into the left, whereas we're putting up some pretty firm resistance on the right. And that's, I think, a consolation and an encouragement.
Yeah, that is. And, you know, and it is unfortunate to see how much of a following that Nick Fuentes and Candace Owens, you know, and others have. But hopefully there are still enough, you know, rational people within conservatism that say, okay, here are the principles that we stand for. And, you know, this is one of the problems that I've had for a long time with this so-called big tent mentality, is that, you know, when we bring people in and say, okay, as long as you vote Republican, you're one of our ranks, and yet we fail to require those individuals to assimilate to the platform that and the principles that we stand for, then ultimately the principles get watered down and we find ourselves like what the Republican Party platform did in 2024, to water down the issue of life, the issue of marriage being between one man and one woman. I mean, are we set to potentially in the very near future kind of water down you know, some of these other issues that like, you know, the racism, anti-Semitism as well, because, you know, I would have thought the Republican Party would never have watered down the issue of marriage and life.
You know, I think that the mainstream of the Republican Party is unchanged and undeterred here. There's a little bit of an illusion that what we see on social media, and even when, you know, people have large followings, I mean, take Candace, for example. She has a huge following, but I think her following is ultimately driven by people who are looking for, almost you could call it a perverse form of entertainment. I mean, I liken it to something like midget bowling. You know, it's so ridiculous, and you don't really want to look, but there's a midget going flying down the aisle, hitting the pins, and you, like, can't look away. So it's almost like a perverse form of freak show, a kind of entertainment. I don't think it can be considered serious political commentary. Now, Tucker is a little bit of a different animal, because I think with Tucker, he actually is making a bid to try to steer MAGA and steer the GOP in a new direction. And I think, again, that needs to be resisted, and happily, it is being resisted.
Yeah, so where do you think then, Dinesh D'Souza, that the future of MAGA is headed? Because I don't think that that J.D. Vance, if he is, and I think he is right now, at least seemingly, the heir apparent. I know he'll have challengers across the board in 2028, as he should. I mean, that's what primaries are for. But I don't think that he goes along with this whole narrative from Tucker. And yet, you know, we still see Turning Point, for example, with Charlie's Legacy still platforming Tucker Carlson, and not as an organization. They haven't condemned Tucker. I mean, who knows what Charlie would have said if he, you know, were still here. And I'm sure he would have had a reaction to Tucker and Nick Fuentes. But, you know, with this kind of internal struggle with Donald Trump not being on the ticket, we only have a few years to kind of find our identity that is in a post-Trump but still very heavily MAGA world.
It is interesting, maybe a little odd, that Trump has sort of stayed out of this. Now, I attribute this to the fact that Trump really doesn't like this kind of ideological sifting. His own style is very much operational, on the ground. It's not theoretical. It's not ideological. So maybe he feels like this is something that's a little remote. But, of course, this is, in fact, a clash about the way forward post-Trump. So he has a lot of interest in what happens. I think J.D. Vance is trying to figure out a way that he can talk to some of these dislocated young people, these angry young men, if you will, who sort of sit in their basement and they're on social media 8 hours a day, and they just kind of rage tweet against people, and they've become convinced that there's this all these elites who are against them, and they're not wrong about that, but what they're wrong about is that there's a master manipulator called Mossad or called Israel that is somehow controlling all the puppet strings. So I think all of this does need to be addressed, and maybe J.D. Vance is searching for the right language to do it. But no, I have confidence that J.D. Vance, you know, with an Asian Indian wife and brown skin kids, is not going to go full bigoted on us, or certainly not full anti-Semitic on us. We have a winning formula with MAGA. It's basically to affirm America first, but an America first that is open to conservative blacks, conservative Latinos, conservative immigrants. I think that's a winning message. That's how Trump won last November. And there are people who are trying to sort of roil up the party, change course. And those are the people we have to watch out for.
Yeah, really well said. And so how do you think then this revival post Charlie's assassination plays into all this, where we're seeing, you know, in masses, young men especially going back to the church, but we're also not seeing yet, at least, the wider swath of the evangelical church really meet this moment in terms of bridging that gap between, okay, you're in the church, Christ first, and that requires then a worldview of the proper role of government. How does that piece of it, in your mind, fit into this broader question of where the MAGA movement is going?
Well, this is a key question, Jenna, because I think that the church can play a critical role in taking this kind of yearning on the part of young people. See, the yearning can go in two directions. Just take the phrase, Christ is King. Christ is King, on the one side, is a phrase that we can all champion, we can all echo. It is simply, it's, I want to live a better life. Jesus is my Lord and Savior. We're all on board. But then Christ is King can also be used to, as a kind of cudgel to go out and like bash the Jews and say, hey, the Jews have rejected Christ, so the Jews are headed for hell. And not only that, but we're going to fight them with all the tools at our disposal, and the Jews killed Christ. So Christ is King, the same phrase, but can be deployed in two completely different contexts. So who decides which context it's going to be deployed in? Well, this is where the pastors can come in a sense, being the shepherds we want them to be and showing young people the right way to go. The church, I think, unfortunately, is not doing enough, and it can really help the situation by stepping in.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the moment and the clarion call for pastors to be engaged. And of course, there are a few prominent pastors that are very engaged. My good friend Jack Hibbs is going to be on later on in the program speaking to that, and he's very well engaged. And then there are definitely local pastors that, you know, you wouldn't have ever heard of them. And, you know, I may not even know of them because they are local and they are serving their flocks that are very committed to the Word of God and to teaching. And so we do have, you know, some churches, I'm certainly not suggesting that all churches across America are not doing their job, but overall, you know, I think it is a moment, just like there have been a lot of other critical moments in America's history and world history, where the church has needed to step up and provide the moral framework to meet this moment. And this is where I think, Dinesh, one of the problems of MAGA that I think has been kind of a false accusation to Christians, but I think overall a correct assessment of where politics has replaced the church for some, is a concern, because when you hold up the political party or a personality like a Donald Trump as the answer to life's problems and that government is the solution, well, that's actually a leftist ideal. That is a God replacement. That is a godless view. And that's, in a sense, what MAGA has leaned into at least a little bit. And I think we need to resist that while still recognizing that politics has its place. It's not religion, but it certainly does have its place, and we need to use the power that is delegated by the Constitution and the various branches ultimately for good. And that's where I see the Republican Party just not having the will or the spine at all to govern. It's like they want to still be in the minority. And I've been ranting about this all week, but it's so frustrating to me to see in the midst of this government shutdown, for example, that Republicans don't just say, you know what? We have the majority. We can end the filibuster. We're not going to let the Democrats, as the very minority party here, have any sort of win. And we are going to legislate. We're going to push through our agenda. And we're going to use the next 3 years to get business done. I mean, they're just not willing to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's a certain type of sleepiness on the Republican side where Republicans think we'll get elected and we will just kind of hold the fort. We won't advance. We'll just kind of preserve where we are. And then the other side comes in and aggressively begins to dismantle, to change, to radically transform, in Obama's words, to remake America. So Trump represented a more kind of energetic form of Republicanism. And I have to say, a lot has been done over the past several months. But there are also large areas that have been neglected. And so, you know, the time is running out. There's going to be a midterm in a year. So we have to show results before that midterm for the American people to, in a sense, say, keep going, MAGA, into 2028. Politics, in the end, is judged by what it produces. So I'm hopeful that we will correct course. I'm hopeful that this kind of big skirmish over Tucker, this sort of divisiveness within the party, will abate. It may be too much to expect that Tucker will, you know, exorcise the demon that he said attacked correct him and correct course, I don't know. But I certainly think that as a political movement, we need to keep our eye on where we want to go and not only be clear in articulating that, but actually do things that benefit the American people.
Yeah, so well said. Well, Dinesh, I so appreciate you taking the time to come on this morning and to put this in perspective. And I think that this is really a critical point, especially after the elections on Tuesday, as we move forward into the next phase of the MAGA movement, the next phase of American history, looking forward to the midterms and then 2028. You know, so all of this is converging, you know, at this point that we really need to be very wise and we need to understand our principles so that we can articulate them and defend them when we have a lot of these internal clashes within the party so that we can make sure that we do keep our principles. So Dinesh, really appreciate it. And where can people find your show? And of course, they can follow you on X, and I'd encourage them to do that.
Follow me on X at Dinesh D'Souza. I also do a daily podcast, audio and video, and my latest film, The Dragon's Prophecy, which you can stream or get DVDs. Go to thedragonsprophecyfilm.com.
Thanks so much. And that's an excellent film. I watched it, loved it. Anyone who wants to know about this moment in time for Israel and everything going on absolutely needs to watch The Dragon's Prophecy. So thanks so much, Dinesh. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth? Truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the growing life inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she will choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, helping them choose life, and sharing the truth. Friend, this is not the time to be silent. It is the time for courage, for truth, and for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby to help her choose truth and choose life. Please donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250 baby, or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And we're still talking about this whole issue of the young voter. And it's been really fascinating, of course, to see kind of this breakdown in the demographics between, you know, who voted for Trump in 2024, and then also you know, the young people that voted for Mamdani in New York City. And then we're also kind of seeing this huge split and divide among the right of young people over the issue of Israel. And of course, with the rise of Tucker Carlson's controversy in platforming Nick Fuentes and the whole America First versus America Only and Israel. There's what I would say more broadly and kind of distill it into one point is to say that it seems like conservative principles are somehow not being vested into the next generation as much as populism. But let's talk about it. Joining me now is my good friend, John Root. He is a faith, sports, and cultural commentator. And John, you know, what do you think about the mentality right now of young people more broadly, but especially those on the right, or who would at least classify themselves on the right? I'm seeing kind of a worldview, I don't know if we would say crisis, but maybe a worldview confusion, even in the midst of what we've seen with a lot of revival and a lot of young men, especially who are going back to church, but seeing that we're not really coupling and connecting faith with politics.
Yeah, I mean, you even look at Mamdani being elected. The vast majority of quote-unquote college-educated young people voted for him in mass. So obviously that goes back to colleges and universities being indoctrination zones. But yeah, we have to try to find, you know, at the same time where a lot of people have tried to say revival is happening, or we might be on the brink of revival in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's assassination, there's more Bibles being bought than ever in the United States. We're hearing people are flocking to churches, people are interested in Christianity, but at the same time, Satan's working overtime. There's a lot of evil in this world, and then we're also seeing a fracturing within the movement. There's people that are saying, don't punch right, a.k.a. don't necessarily keep folks on the right accountable, and just attack the left. But the left doesn't seem like it's really being attacked properly. And then you have literal communists that are elected. You have an AG in Virginia that's hired by the people to be the attorney general when he said he wanted to murder conservatives and wish ill on their children. I mean, obviously this Israel situation, I think, leads to more of a conversation about biblical illiteracy and how the church is really failing a lot of young people. They're looking to get discipled by the culture, by cultural and political pundits, rather than their pastors and their elders and discipleship leaders. Like, this is a huge issue, and it is a crisis, and it's a crisis of confusion. And it feels like we had so much great momentum, and now it seems like things are crumbling.
Yeah, and on that note, I mean, to say that things are crumbling, I think, is an apt phrasing, because when we saw the momentum out of 2024 and how much I think all of us on the conservative right were hopeful when President Trump took office again, we have the trifecta. Over the last year, we haven't really seen as many of these phenomenal wins as I think we were promised. And that leads into where I think the young people are discouraged and who are wanting the wins, even to the point where they're perhaps abandoning some of the principles, because it is frustrating when you're continued to be promised and promised and promised without the deliveries, at least from the government as a whole. I mean, I think Trump is legitimately doing as much as he can on the executive level, but you have to have Congress come alongside that and actually be willing to legislate and willing to govern. And what young people are seeing right now is kind of this juxtaposition between the desire to win, but the will to actually lead and to govern. And so they're rejecting that, and I think wisely, but instead of recognizing that it's a problem with leadership, they're presuming it's a problem with conservative principles. And that's where I think the church needs to step in, and Christians need to step in and say, okay, here's why the principles are correct, and we just need to have leaders with the will and the boldness and the courage to actually follow through and be willing to govern according to the principles of the Bible.
Yeah, and that's where I've actually talked to my pastor, elders, local church leaders in the Phoenix, Arizona area about how there needs to be maybe more conversations about cultural apologetics, because that's where I go back to what I said earlier, is young people are getting discipled. You know, they're going to church, but they're getting discipled by political pundits. You know, they're going to Tucker Carlson, and they're looking for a good cultural apologetic when it comes to Israel, because it seems like so many young people, I've talked to a lot of young people, especially some kids that go to Grand Canyon University, and they're like, why is all the conversation within the right and the, you know, political Christian right, you know, talking about Israel? Like, how am I supposed to think about this? What does the Bible say? I got zillions of different, you know, eschatological views from different people on campus, and, you know, how should we view this as Americans? And in general, the church needs to step up, because if you're not discipling the young people, they're going to get it from the world. And a lot of people within the Christian media, or conservative media, excuse me, Jenna, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, they're Christian in name only. You know, they have a specific agenda. We've seen that over and over the last few months. And if biblical illiteracy is going to continue to be a problem, we're going to see cultural apologetics that are all over the map. And young people are, you know, growing in identitarianism. There's a lot of people that are actually young people legitimately following Nick Fuentes, and they don't think he's that crazy. And that should scare a lot of people. And they start to think that a little bit more because of softball interviews from people like Tucker. You know, he doesn't ask him any difficult questions. He says that he's a, you know, fan of Stalin, and there's no pushback. So, like, we have to, hopefully there's a little bit of a referendum. There's free speech, of course. But young people are flocking to some of these voices because their church leaders aren't talking about it. And then they're getting a false sense of where they should go as young voters, as young Americans, and what really is important. And I think it just leads to more and more confusion for young people in the United States.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right to point to the culture. I mean, that was what Andrew Breitbart famously said, is that, you know, politics is downstream from culture, and we have to start with a culture, and we have to engage young people in where they're at and have the answers for the reality to which we're presented, and to have those answers and say, okay, here are your concerns, and here's how the Bible addresses them, and then here's how the civil government fits into all this as just one piece. And that's where, you know, the church really has failed in America to be the most influential institution in the civil arena. And the church, of course, should be supporting the family more than even the government. I mean, the government should protect the family and the right of parents and all of those things, but it's really the church that should come alongside the family and support and teach sound doctrine and all of that. And so with this revival, John Reardon, just the last few minutes I have with you here, and I so appreciate your commentary. Do you think that this, you know, kind of revival that we've seen, especially in the last couple months in the wake of Charlie Kirk's assassination, is going to foster more, I think, better conservatives, if we can call it that, down the road? Do you see the engagement of people wanting to go to church? I mean, if they want to, we still have to have good churches for them to want to go to. Do you see this revival having a real impact?
Yeah, and I think it needs to be done through solid doctrine and biblical teaching and biblical understanding. And again, that goes back to biblical literacy. Is a lot of people are looking for peace, value, and fulfillment, and they're not finding it in politics. You know, they're finding out there's more division and confusion as they dive into just politics without Christ. Obviously, there's a huge issue of Christless conservatism, but if we truly believe that we are doing everything for the glory of God, and we want a nation that honors God, and obviously a nation that honors God will be honored by God. Obviously, I think at times you have, you know, evil leaders like Mondani, they rise up, and God allows that. And I think at times that's judgment, and it's time for Christians to, you know, stand up. And there's going to be Christians that are going to be in New York City for years, and it's going to be a difficult road, and they're kind of going to be seen as exiles compared to what the popular take and ideology is going to be. But, I mean, I believe there's a lot of really good people leading us to righteousness, or at least promoting righteousness, the family, the church, and honoring God and following everything that he says in his word. But there's a lot of leaders that really need to stop being silent. There's a lot of people that need to just influence their own family, the small circles they're in at their work, because we can't just look to these popular media figures or politicians to be the leaders of that. We're all supposed to be making disciples, and if we take up that mantle, so to speak, I think there can be real revival in this nation, hopefully.
Yeah, so well said. Well, we got to take a break here, but John Root, yeah, that's absolutely it, is that we can't replace the church with politics. And that's unfortunately what we've seen a lot with the rise of the MAGA movement, is looking to politics and government as the answer. And that's really a leftist mentality. That is a God replacement. We have to ensure that Christ is at the center, and that we put government in its proper role in place. And it does have a proper role in place, but we can't extend it beyond that and certainly not have a politics as a religion. So thanks so much, John Root. You can follow him at JONNYROOT_ on X and everywhere on social media. I encourage you to do that, and we'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we're continuing to talk about the future of conservatism, the kind of big picture perspective of where we go in a post-Trump MAGA world, the kind of infighting on the right that we've seen with all of the controversies from Israel to Tucker Carlson platforming anti-Semitic Nick Fuentes to, all of these things that really have, in my opinion, solidified the fact that we need to do better as Christian conservatives with bridging the worldview between the truth of Christ and how that truth then dictates our view of the role of government and how our view on policies and politics necessarily depends on the biblical worldview. And all of that is just on the right, much less what we can talk about with the insanity on the left with what we've seen just this past week in the elections, including Prop 50 in California and the election of a communist to New York City's mayoral office. So to break all of this down from a worldview perspective, let's welcome in Pastor Jack Hibbs, who is the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel Chino Hills, and you should be following him on all media platforms, including Instagram, has a bunch of great videos. And Pastor Jack, from kind of the 30,000-foot perspective, where do you see us in this moment now after this past Tuesday's elections?
Well, Jenna, it's obvious that as you begin to look around at the landscape from coast to coast, that the conservative, and I would assume that that includes the Christian vote as well, either got caught with our liberty down or we have somehow fallen asleep in such a way that we have not engaged in this republic. You look at some of the voter activity, turnout. There seemed to be a lull, which to me speaks about us kind of being on cruise control. We certainly saw that in California. You mentioned Proposition 50, which was a massive, blatant steal by the Democrat Party led by Gavin Newsom. And the voter turnout, Jenna, among the conservatives was very, very weak. The Christian and the conservative did not vote to stop this terrible proposition. And we've been analyzing this since Tuesday. And the ground that we made in the last 27 years, we lost in one night. Regarding Prop 50. That said, it came about because of apathy. And so, Jenna, I think, how does a New York mayor who's a self-proclaimed socialist Muslim, 24 years after the attack on September 11th, 2001, by Muslims, become mayor? I can only assume, Jenna, that the Christian community in the New York area did not vote. They didn't get out. They didn't get involved. We are not, as we were warned by Ben Franklin, we are not keeping the republic, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it is really frustrating to see how so many Christians have basically given up on politics because it's not perfect or because, fill in the blank. I mean, there are so many reasons that we could get discouraged or that we could say, rightfully so, that politics is dirty or, all of these things that we've heard since really the beginning of the origin of original sin, right? Like, we know that the civil government is not what the government of God himself will be at the end of all things, and that we see in Revelation where we will have a perfect king. And so this is going to not be perfect, and we all need to know that, but we still have an obligation, especially in America, to participate, because we have been given such a great blessing of liberty to actually be able to vote for those who have government power over us and who are deciding a lot of these things. And so when we look at those numbers in New York City of people who didn't come out and vote, it is really frustrating. What do you see as the church's maybe lack of engagement on this issue overall, that we could be doing better to not just get people engaged on specific issues like pro-life policy and family, but seeing overall how they have to engage the civil square and the civil government through their vote?
Jenna, as always, you frame it so beautifully. And look, I get to say this because I am one, and that is the pastors. It's the pastors of New York. It's the pastors of America. It's the pastors of California failing to do their job, which is to educate their congregations in all things concerning righteousness. And voting is an act of righteousness. We live in a republic where it is whereby we, the people, and yet pastors have really, in my opinion, Jenna, have been very negligent and very wrong in not equipping their people how to vote in biblical worldview. And the reason, I think, is that they think it's dirty, as you said, and yet their very act of disengagement creates a void, and the void is filled by people like Mandani. The void is filled by people like, you can go down the list. When good people do not get involved, then the other people group will get involved. And we see this right of movement to seize power because the Christian, what, is somehow thinking, I can't get involved in that. It's dirty. Well, how do you think this nation came about? How do you think, listen, everything about the Civil War was not clean and beautiful and perfect, but we fought to begin the freedoms for the blacks and for others. Nothing is pure and clean in this world, but the Christian, I don't know, Jenna, the Christian has got some sort of a plastic veneer faith that could melt if it gets too excited. I don't believe that. I think our faith is galvanized. It is empowered. It's led by the Holy Spirit. And I'm telling you, Jenna, I've said it to you before in private and in public, and that is, on one Sunday in America, if America's pastors woke up to instruct, encourage their people to get involved in the culture and in this republic, the vote could change overnight. And voting is not evil. Voting is not ugly. Voting is not wrong. What happens is God gave us this beautiful republic, and because of cultural disengagement, wokeness, call it whatever you want, apathy, cowardice, pastors have abandoned their post, in my opinion.
So well said. And it's really a shame, because the church historically, Pastor Jack, as you know, and as pastors who are faithful like you want to still be, churches used to be the center of the community. And this is where families would gather. They'd all be part of the church. That was the central fulcrum of society. And when we have so disengaged, and now the political party is what everyone is kind of centering around, it's a wrong misplacement of that trust for the moral aptitude of society and for the moral upbringing and responsibility that should be rightfully with the church to teach and express. And I think we're seeing the outflow of that, and unfortunately the consequence of that. And one of the things in the wake of Charlie Kirk's assassination over the last, you know, several months, I mean, so many different points of, you know, thoughts and lessons and, you know, other things that I've been thinking, but one of them has been how Charlie was a Christian first, absolutely, but he didn't wear that on his sleeve so much that it was damaging in terms of his ability to relate to people and invite them to the conversation in a way that they were willing to engage him. I mean, in some of the reels that I've seen, it's actually been really fascinating how people only knew him as kind of the turning point guy and the conservative, the Trump supporter, and didn't know as much about his faith. And he was able to engage in a way that that brought his faith into what was already a political conversation. And do you think that there's kind of a lesson there to say that for some Christians, it's almost like we're in a sense off-putting if we wear our Christianity so front and center that people aren't even willing to engage on other issues of, you know, politics and news of the day because they feel like the only place that we'll go is just how, you know, they need to be involved in church and religion instead of logically talking about things? Because the example that from Charlie was when he was asked, does he support pro-life from just a religious perspective? And he said, well, of course I do because I'm a Christian. And he said, but aside from that, I can argue to you logically and rationally why pro-life is the best position from the law, from philosophy, from the empirical view of it. And it actually changed the mind of the person he was engaging with. Do you think there needs to be more of that?
Well, of course there does. And look, Charlie's made clear what we all believe as followers of Christ, and that is there is no topic, there is no arena, there is no issue that Christianity is exempt from. Charlie understood that. So that's why, as truth belongs to God, all truth is God's truth, Charlie could say, hey, I don't have to argue the pro-life issue based upon my faith. I can go to science. I can go to morality. I can go to what is reasonable. And you could argue those things, and I believe every Christian should argue those things, without having to drop chapter verse. I mean, we should be able to walk into the public square without announcing, like Mondani just did the other night, hi, I'm your new mayor, and I'm a Muslim. I mean, he wasn't shy about it, but Christians tiptoe around about it. But here's the truth of the matter. Our God is the God of truth. I don't have to go to the public square, to the city council, and say, hi, everybody, my name's Jack, and I'm a Christian, and this is what I want to argue about regarding whatever the issue might be on the docket. I should be able to say, hi, my name's Jack, and I'm going to argue this issue right now because it makes a lot of sense to apply logic, reason, to what I'm about to say. And if somebody says, oh, you're a Christian, so what does that have to do with anything? I didn't even bring up Christianity. I brought up logic. I brought up reason. Why do I say that, Jenna? Because our God is a God of logic and reason. And so, you know, with what's going on around us, if you don't mind me pivoting, let's remember, Jenna, that Daniel chapter 2, verse 21 says that God is the one who sets up kings and removes kings. He installs authorities and removes authorities. So, Jenna, what's going on? What's going on with, for example, the new authority in New York City? Who did that? What's going on here? Do we know that voter turnout among the conservatives and Christians was basically non-existent? Yes. Why? What's going on in the sense that's deeper in the realm of the spirit? 24 years ago, New York was attacked. 24 years forward, they elect a Muslim. What a remarkable moment. What does this mean? Is America, because of its lack of Christian witness, are we now seeing a change of leadership because God is responding? You want to be apathetic? You don't want to cry out to me? You don't want me to install godly people, or at least people who I can use? Then I'll step out of it. And I will give you leaders that you want, like he did with Israel. He gave them King Saul. But if God establishes rulers, Jenna, and he takes rulers out, then the underlying question is this. Who installed Mondani, and for what reason? Could God be behind the scenes of the wake-up call to a nation that has forgotten God? Is this the beginning of a chastisement coming from the hand of God? I don't know, but it would not be unique the way God deals with nations.
It's so well said. And, you know, that big picture overview, I think, is the perfect thought that we need to carry into this weekend. And we do need to be better as Christians with explaining to people who don't believe in God, so they're not going to care a chapter and verse what the Bible says, by saying, you know, that we are Christians because it's the best explanation for the reality to which we're presented. Our God is a God of reason, and we can argue rationally and logically for our positions without you even first being a Christian. We don't have to evangelize before we can argue for things like pro-life and against things like communism. So thanks so much, Pastor Jack. We're already out of time, but as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net. Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.